We sort of break it down into three main buckets of the work that we're trying to do now. One is the vilification and the obsession with the Orthodox Jew leaving their identity, as if it's a thing to celebrate for a minority group to be less of who they are, when if you put that dynamic on any other group, it would be the most offensive framework to view them in. The second are just sort of those like age-old tropes, like the greedy Jew, the pushy Jew, the vicious Jew. We're seeing more and more examples of Israelis, especially, being depicted as bloodthirsty and vicious. And then there's sort of the third category, which is the Jew as white. We are actually all a people from the Middle East. And when there is this continuous portrayal of Jews as white Europeans and not as a people that were exiled to Europe and other places from the Middle East, it's a very subtle way to message people away from believing that we are indigenous to the land of Israel.
I'm Scott Kahn, and this is the Orthodox Conundrum. This is the Orthodox Conundrum on JewishCoffeeHouse.com. I'm Scott Kahn. Jews control Hollywood, or so everyone seems to believe, for better and very often for worse. And it's true that there are many Jewish people who work in the entertainment industry. But this fact is quite distinct from the question of how Jews are typically portrayed in movies and TV shows. And in those realms, there are serious problems, both regarding the depiction of Jews in general and the depiction of Orthodox Jews in particular. According to Alison Josephs, founder of Jew in the City, this is a serious problem with long-term consequences and needs to be addressed. Alison has been at the forefront of trying to change things in Hollywood, and for that purpose founded the Jew in the City Hollywood Bureau. She and I spoke about the negative stereotypes of Jews and Orthodox Jews that are both parroted and furthered by the entertainment industry, the reasons that Jews are often last in line when it comes to inclusion and sensitivity, what has changed since October 7th, whether Jewish people should fight for inclusion in the places where diversity, equity, and inclusion hold sway, or whether we're better off trying to undermine the entire structure, whether there's a problem with non-Jews portraying Jews on screen, examples of some shows where Jews are shown in a positive light, as well as some where they are seen with the typical negative tropes, which celebrities have been vocal in fighting on behalf of Jews and Israel, and more. We'll begin that conversation in just a moment. First, let me remind you to subscribe to the Orthodox Conundrum podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and please rate it and write a review. Please subscribe to my Substack, Orthodox Conundrum Commentary. Last week, I released two new articles. The first is Purim and the Inscrutable Will of God, where, based on Rav Shagar, I discuss the Purim message that God's will transcends logic and the importance of leaving behind the childish assumption that God's will inevitably accords with our own understanding of what should happen. The second was written in honor of Major League Baseball's opening day and is entitled Robin Roberts, Bobby Thompson, and the Ultimate Redemption. It offers a type of counterpoint to the first article I wrote last week. The link is in the description of this podcast, so get your free subscription today, and please make sure to share it with your friends as well. And finally, remember that JCH Podcast Productions is the best place for you to go in order to produce your podcast from start to finish. Write to me at scott@jewishcoffeehouse.com so that we can discuss helping you make a high-quality, professional, and popular podcast. Alison Josephs has been involved in the field of Jewish education for over 20 years and is the partner and Torah mentor to actress Mayim Bialik. Variety named her as an advocate for inclusivity in the entertainment industry in its 2022 Inclusion Impact Report. Alison has been quoted or written about in numerous publications, including Variety, Newsweek, Daily Mail, Vanity Fair, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, People Magazine, New York Post, Daily News, TMZ, The Daily Beast, and Hollywood Reporter. She has appeared on numerous television and radio networks, including CBS, ABC, Chris Cuomo's News Nation, Fox 5, TLC, Associated Press TV, and NPR. And her articles have appeared in publications including Variety, The Washington Post, The New York Post, The Daily News, JTA Jewish Week, The Jerusalem Post, and The Forward. Pearson Education, the largest textbook company in the world, produced a video segment on Alison's life for the Judaism chapter of their textbook. She is a sought-after international lecturer who has spoken at Congress and whose corporate clients include Con Edison and NYU Langone, and hosts a weekly podcast on the Nachum Segal Network. She received her Bachelor of Arts from Columbia University in Philosophy and lives with her husband and four children minutes from the George Washington Bridge. Allison Josephs, thank you very much for joining me today on the Orthodox Conundrum podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been very involved, Allison, in lobbying Hollywood for greater and more accurate Jewish representation in visual entertainment like TV shows and movies, particularly regarding the portrayal of Orthodox Jews. So before discussing what you're trying to achieve and why, can you describe how you became involved in this particular area?
Yeah, so I was raised as a proud conservative Jew. The interesting thing is that until maybe the last couple of years, it didn't occur to me that if you consider yourself a proud Jew, but you hate a certain type of Jew, and that type of Jew looks like how your great-grandparents looked, maybe you're not as proud as you thought you were. But in my mind, I was raised as a proud Jew, but at the same time, raised to look down on and judge the Orthodox community. Most of my ideas about them came from what I saw on television, film, news, media. My father also brought home a lot of negative ideas about them. And so I kind of had like my sense of like Jewishness bifurcated into normal Jews and the not so good Jews that should get with the program and not be so extreme. When I was 8, a father in my school had a mental breakdown, killed both kids and himself. And suddenly I was going to a triple funeral at 8 years old. And this tragedy in my town caused me to ask big questions about my own existence and the purpose of life. And to make a very long story short, by the end of this journey of existential angst and some insomnia and panic attacks, I connected with some Orthodox Jews, and the wisdom and the meaning and the purpose that I found in their lifestyle seemed to quench the thirst of my soul. And I started to become more observant. And when I adopted a more observant life after meeting Orthodox Jews, I realized that they were so different than what I had been led to believe they would be. And it was really because of that gap between the reality that I discovered and the perception that media had permeated that I felt like something had to be corrected.
So, Allison, that sounds like the primary motivating force you have now for trying to change the portrayal of Orthodox Jews comes from a place of wanting almost kiruv in order to allow other people to not have those bad perceptions. Or is it something else also?
So, you know, I think the word kiruv, it's a bit of a loaded term and comes with it not always the best associations. Kiruv, I think, should mean exposing people to accurate information and letting them decide what to do with it. It can sometimes mean, and people can sometimes associate it with being agenda-driven. And so I want to separate myself from the latter meaning and clarify that the outreach that I'm interested in doing is about putting accurate and authentic information in front of people and trusting that everyone was endowed with free will and everybody gets to make their own decision as an adult. But we first need to know what it is we're even deciding about. And so it's really always been about correcting information. And I do think that the Torah sells itself. I do think that Torah Judaism sells itself. But at the same time, I think it's important to keep in mind that adults get to make their own choices.
Okay, I certainly agree with that. And I'm on board with that entire statement. Let me ask if you also see negative portrayals of Jews in general in Hollywood, because obviously you've done a lot more research than most people in this area. Or is it something that's specifically limited to Orthodox Jews, both in terms of your own work and in terms of objectively what's out there in terms of the portrayal of Jews in general?
So there's definitely negative portrayals of Jews in general. I paid less attention to it, to be honest, for the first 15 years of our organization. And I did so because I made a mistake. I believed that, hey, there's Jews in Hollywood. Jews can tell the stories of their lives as they see fit. So if they had an overbearing mother, or if Hebrew school was boring, or if high holiday services were meaningless, who am I to tell them that they can't depict their lives this way? When we launched our Hollywood Bureau, which is our newest program that has reached Hollywood itself and where we're doing advocacy within the studios themselves, the original vision of this bureau was to be an Orthodox bureau. Very quickly on, we heard from Jews from across the spectrum of observance that they also felt like they couldn't control their own portrayals. They felt like there were fellow Jews in their own camps that were portraying them in a, you know, inauthentic and negative way. And there were also non-Jews that were portraying Jews with tropes, and they didn't have a mechanism to fix that. And as soon as they reached out and said, we need to be a part of this advocacy too, it was so obvious that we had to broaden the tent. And then once I started paying attention, this is going back to 2021, I was actually horrified with what I saw. And we sort of break it down into three main buckets of the work that we're trying to do now. One is the vilification and, you know, sort of the obsession with the Orthodox Jew leaving their identity as if it's a thing to celebrate for a minority group to be less of who they are, when if you put that dynamic on any other group, it would be the most offensive framework to view them in. The second bucket of issues that we're dealing with are just sort of those like age old tropes, like the greedy Jew, the pushy Jew, the vicious Jew. We're seeing more and more examples of Israelis especially being depicted as bloodthirsty and vicious. And then there's sort of the third category, which is the Jew as white. And the reason that I think we need to push back at this, not only is our diaspora more diverse than Hollywood would let you to lead you to believe with only sort of the focus on matzo balls and gefilte fish, we're actually all a people from the Middle East. And when there is this continuous portrayal of Jews as white Europeans and not as a people that were exiled to Europe and other places from the Middle East, it's a very subtle way to message people away from believing that we are indigenous to the land of Israel. And so that's something else that we need to push back on, and we are pushing back on.
You know, that's interesting, because the first two tropes you mentioned, that idea of Jews leaving Orthodoxy and also the pushy, greedy Jew, unfortunately, that's very apparent to me. How is this whiteness of the Jew made into a trope? Like, where is that manifest, for example?
So a lot of it is inauthentic casting. There is this. Now, like, the question of who gets to play a Jew or who gets to play anyone, I think this is a bigger question that Hollywood needs to answer. The key for everyone else, or the case for everyone else, is authentic casting. And when you have authentic casting for everyone but Jews, what that signals is that Jews are too privileged and too powerful to need the protections that these diversity and inclusion initiatives are providing. And that's not the case at all. Jews are actually an extremely vulnerable people. In fact, per capita, we were the most attacked minority group in the US in 2022, as per the FBI hate crimes report. So that's number one. By casting non-Jews often, and especially in lead roles, and especially in female parts, we start to think that a Jew looks like a white European person. An example is in Karate Kid, you have this character, Terry Silver, who is blonde, kind of Aryan looking, very white. He's also maniacal and wealthy and, you know, plotting. You hear the name Silver, and the truth is that that was from the original movie from decades ago. When I heard that, I was like, gosh, I hope this guy doesn't turn out to be Jewish. Well, they had an episode where he is plotting on Shabbat during Shabbat services, and that's explicitly said. And at the end of the scene, after discussing Shabbat services, Terry says shalom to the other Jew in the scene, which is just like, why did you do that? I don't see most of the things. I mean, I did watch Cobra Kai, but there's another Netflix movie called Do Revenge, where, again, a very white looking character is the evil character, very rich. And then they make sure to have a Jewish star on him, and he uses Yiddish words. It's basically by the inauthentic casting. And it's not to say that no Jews look white or no Jews have lighter skin. Obviously, we are a diverse people. The other thing that, you know, as an Ashkenazi Jew with darker skin, whose skin color has always been a topic of conversation, I've only come to realize in the last few years that I am not alone as a olive skinned or, you know, darker skinned Ashkenazi Jew. And this whole dynamic of you're only a Jew of color or a brown Jew if you were exiled to a place that non-Jewish people consider to be a country of color and Israel is excluded. I mean, that's insanity. It's, again, just sort of like stripping the Jewish people of our actual identity. Part of what I've done in terms of telling our story to the studios that are working within the diversity and inclusion narrative is I'm reading how other people tell their stories and trying to find analogous ways to tell the Jewish story, because obviously we fit into a group of people that's marginalized and persecuted and has been othered. I mean, literally, Avraham Avinu was an Ivri because Ivri means other. So from the very beginning, we are an othered people. The snapshot of success that American Jews have, and in the Atlantic a few weeks ago, there was an article about how the golden age of American Jewry is ending. So the snapshot that we've sort of, you know, lived in for this short time doesn't speak to thousands of years of persecution and intergenerational trauma. But I read about a Black woman. This was in like 2020 when there was a lot more awareness of what Black people were going through. And, you know, I think for all the work that's been done and all the ways that different communities are telling others how to understand their story. I mean, what just like blows my mind, and it shouldn't blow my mind because anti-Semitism is a spiritual disease and so it's supposed to defy logic. But after all this progress of, you know, having people explain what their racism looks like and having everybody tell everyone else it's time to listen and understand, like when it's up for the Jews to do that and say, this is what we're experiencing, nobody wants to hear about it. But because I was trying to be a good citizen and understand, I read about a Black woman who had white skin. It was just a story that came up on my Facebook feed. And she said, being white passing isn't privilege. I look like this because my great-great-grandmother was raped by her slave master. And then all of a sudden, like something like dawned on me. Why my whole life do I have to explain why my skin is darker? Why aren't we wondering how some Jews that came from the Middle East and got exiled to Europe 1,000 years ago, why are we asking why their skin is lighter? And probably that narrative of violence against foremothers has a lot to do with our story as well. That's not to say there's never been a conversion or an intermarriage, but we were a very insular community. And not only did our laws prohibit that, in most Christian societies, their laws prohibited that as well. And for the random person that did intermarry, they were usually lost to the community and, you know, and purposely assimilated. So for those of us that remained and were Ashkenazi all the way back, that's something that, you know, when we start to tell our story in that way, now suddenly we can say this representation only kind of showing us as white European looking people is kind of very subtly shifting the narrative in people's minds. And we need to reclaim our authentic story and history.
I'm so glad you said that. It's such a painful chapter. I mean, we're talking about 2,000 years of a chapter, but this idea of violence against Jewish women, which I almost never hear discussed, I've thought about that extensively. I think you're 100% right. People try to use our supposed whiteness as a sign that we're actually not indigenous to the Middle East, whereas the reality is probably much more along what you're saying. Yes, intermarriage. Yes, conversion, but primarily violence against Jewish women, and we're being denied that story ourselves. I think that's a very important point. I want to ask you about one specific thing, though. You talk about this whiteness and the fact that Jewish actors or non-Jewish actors can pass as Jews, and there's often one exception. They have to have a big nose. For example, Bradley Cooper, in his recent biopic of Leonard Bernstein, he put on a prosthetic nose, and that was semi-controversial, I guess. And part of that, to me, not that it really matters, except that in the Western imagination, probably, as I once read, because of anti-Semitic tropes, the Jew is associated with the big nose and evil people. The cartoon characters who are evil, they have big noses as well. What did you think about that Bradley Cooper episode? Did you think that was okay or did you think that was a problem?
Yeah, I think it's a problem. Well, first of all, the big nose was introduced into Western art about 1,000 years ago. And there was an earlier period where Jews were not depicted with big noses. And when they started adding in the big noses, it was in an attempt to vilify Jews. The other thing is that, again, whatever the rules are for everyone else, we should ask for the same rules for us. And so if you go back and say that black face, yellow face, red face are problematic for everybody else, and you look back into the history of it, and you say that blackface actually began in Shakespearean times, well, so did stage Jew. That's where these depictions of non-Jews dressing up as Jews with prosthetic noses, with curly hair, with beards, with bushy eyebrows, with Jewish clothing, with Jewish affect. It all started in that same place. Additionally, in the 1800s, there were vaudeville style minstrels, both doing blackface and Jewface, and it was called Jewface at the time. It happened in Eastern Europe, and it also happened in the US. It was at a certain point originally done by non-Jews in the US, and it got so popular for Jews to do it to themselves that there was a letter written in 1901 by a council of rabbis in the U.S. basically telling Jews to stop doing this. Now, we need to ask ourselves a few questions. can a Black person do blackface? Well, American society has told us yes. Tyra Banks put blackface on one of her models on America's Next Top Model and got called out for this. Beyonce darkened her skin for a photo shoot and got called out for this. What about the intent? A lot of people said the Bradley Cooper prosthetic nose was okay because its intention was not anti-Semitic and the children gave it their nose bracha. So is it okay now? Well, according to the rules of diversity, equity, and inclusion, including to the rules of blackface, it's impact, not intent, that matters. So again, either these rules count for everybody or they count for nobody. But my question is, where is the consistency? So if we say that you can do a really beautiful portrayal of, you know, a person of a different race and use, you know, makeup and prosthetics to turn the actor into that person and do it with respect and honor, and that's okay. So that includes Jews in that group. If we say, no, this crosses a line, we can never do this, then why is it okay for Jews? And so I think in my mind, we can't have a different rule for Jews. The other thing is that Bradley Cooper is dating Gigi Hadid. He signed a ceasefire letter. He was smart enough to not bring Gigi to the Oscars. My feeling is that if you're going to make money off of Jews, you should at least support them. They take Helen Mirren. She's actually someone who grew up and visited Israel. She is a longtime supporter of Israel. I saw Golda recently and I was really happy with her portrayal. It felt very authentic. It felt very proud. She actually has some Jewish ancestry. So like, again, in an ideal world, if the rule is never, ever for anyone else, would I have preferred if they found a Jew to play her? Maybe. But did she do a fabulous job? And did I feel like it came from a place where she is an ally of the community? She's going to use her platform to support Israel in the community. I did feel that. And so it doesn't feel the same way as Bradley Cooper, where the schnoz seemed even bigger than Leonard Bernstein's actual nose.
Okay, that's a really good point. I want to ask you a little bit more about diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'm going to actually read something that I found on your website. It says that one of the goals of your organization, the Hollywood Bureau of Jew in the City, it mentions met every major studio in Hollywood to introduce the idea that Jews belong in DEI conversations, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, and that Jewish representation and accommodations need to change. So, Allison, my question is this. I agree with everything that you've said. Is it right for us now as a Jewish community to press for inclusion in DEI, to be part of the same rules as everybody else? A lot of us would say that those rules are ridiculous. They're actually counterproductive. Better than try to say, we want to be included in those marginalized communities, say, you know what, this entire structure is problematic, and therefore, let's try and break it down. How do you feel about that?
So I think that there is a robust conversation happening now in the country and in the Jewish community specifically about, do we try to modify what exists or tear the whole thing down and, you know, build something instead? There are people that are working on the latter. I'm part of the group working on the former, try to work with what we have. Where I see the toxic and poisonous parts of this dynamic is the E part, the equity part of DEI, because it's Marxism. And I think anybody that is willing to put in hard work wants to see people that actually be rewarded in a meritocratic system, not just have a certain quota. So I think that there is a lot of people of all ethnic and racial backgrounds that see that we get into a very dangerous place when it's sort of like numbers based and quotas based as, and sort of these outcome itself having to be equitable as opposed to trying to give people equal opportunities and trying to lift up people that had less opportunities or went through a more difficult time. That's number one. The other thing is that CRT, critical race theory, it's a lie. It's deeply problematic and it is deeply anti-Semitic. The basic idea is that everyone is either an oppressor or is oppressed. And if you're one, you can't be the other. And when you kind of add it all up, they put Jews at the top of the oppression hierarchy. And it's too simplistic and too false of a model to hold true. Does it mean that certain people have certain privileges? Of course they do. If you're raised in a happy, healthy home, that's one of the best privileges that you can get. If you also have money to, you know, to go on top of that, another privilege. Is there a certain privilege that people have if they're not stopped because of their race or they're not ever going to be questioned about their skin color? I'm sure that's a thing that plays into, you know, sort of the overarching picture of what a person experiences in their lifetime. But to simplify that, if you are oppressed, you can't be an oppressor, it's just stupid and ridiculous. And I think that we really need to destroy. And we can think about what privileges we might have, but, you know, again, I think anything that tries to boil things down to such a simplistic model is going to be problematic. What I do think is worth saving is that I think diverse spaces and diverse thought is a really beautiful thing. It's a Jewish thing. I mean, the entire Gemara is full of diverse opinions and thoughts, and that's sort of like the ethos of Judaism, to listen to different voices. It's sort of classical liberalism, and in a way, sort of this new model doesn't actually invite diverse voices or opinions in. It kind of like shuts down anything that goes outside the line or makes people uncomfortable. The other thing is that inclusion is a really nice idea. Obviously, there's a limit of what we can do to accommodate and include, but what we can do to create spaces where more people feel comfortable and more people are accommodated, it's really nice. And certainly as observant Jews, we want our, you know, spiritual traditions and, you know, rituals able to have a place within the workforce, within different communities that we're a part of. When it comes to authentic storytelling, there's a lot that this kind of framework gets right. There are fact sheets and trainings for executive producers and different creatives where they learn about the tropes and stereotypes that different communities are sick of seeing and hearing. And new storylines that kind of defy the stereotype are offered as just different ways to imagine seeing the community. And I think stereotypes for every group are based on some truth. I mean, that's why they're stereotypes. And I also think that by hearing some of the stories that we don't hear as often, people at home can see new ideas of what they could become. We don't want to just be stuck with sort of the worst, most extreme examples of each of our communities. We want to see some of the best examples because, as they say, you can't be what you don't see. And then they also, you know, promote competent consultants to join into telling these stories. And they're involved in everything from, you know, the concept of the original storyline up until marketing. Netflix, a little over a year ago, had a marketing poster where they put horns on Bernie Madoff when they did the series on him. If there was a Jewish consultant involved, they would have caught that and said, what on earth are you doing? You can't put a Jew in front of the Bull of Wall Street. Can't put the poster as a red devil poster. This is a 1,000-year-old trope about Jews. Without that, this was able to happen. And so I think we have to be careful about which parts of this framework are anti-Semitic and problematic and which parts really I think most people can agree on. And it's a better framework than what existed, you know, before these ideas about diversity and inclusion were brought into the fore.
You just said a lot that I want to comment on, but my first question is something that you said when you mentioned that they put Jews at the top of the oppression hierarchy. I'd like to ask who they is, meaning the trope, yet another one, the stereotype is that Jews run Hollywood. And it's certainly true. There are a lot of Jewish people who are involved in the entertainment industry. Most major Hollywood studios were founded by Jews. Not that that has anything to do with them today, but there still are a lot of Jews in Hollywood. My question is, Allison, are a lot of these tropes coming from Jews themselves who are embarrassed of their heritage, Jews who are ignorant of their heritage, or is it happening despite the fact that there are so many Jews in Hollywood?
So I think in terms of like where CRT came out of, I think this is an academic kind of like model. I'm not sure of specifically who, I mean, I think it probably started a few decades ago and it's just gained momentum. And I think, you know, sort of the racial reckoning that the country had after George Floyd was killed contributed to these ideas becoming more popularized. And, you know, when it comes to Jewish thought about sort of how do you find the Shvil Hazahav, the golden mean, there is an idea that sometimes you go too far before you find the middle ground. So I think that this is actually a non-Jewish model that's being promoted in non-Jewish spaces. And I think that there are Jews who are guilty of their success. we don't fit into sort of statistics that make sense. We don't fit into Nobel Prize winners that make sense. We don't fit into, and as a child, my mother, when we didn't have Torah as a way to inspire us, my mother would tell us this number of Jews are doctors and this number are lawyers and this number are Nobel laureates as a way to try to instill pride. When you think about it, there may have to be some sort of divine answer to how is it that in every society, when we are not held back by anti-Semitic laws, do we just sort of rise above in all of these areas? But I do think that with that comes a certain segment of Jews that feel ashamed of success. And again, if success and power and money are vilified, and if this CRT model is to dismantle that, and there are some Jews that I think feel like they need to sort of sacrifice themselves on this altar, as opposed to saying, I worked hard, you know, my parents instilled these values in me. It's not like we are some like waspy people that had land or wealth for generations and generations. I mean, what ends up happening is that like every 50 or 100 years, we have to sort of run with whatever is on our backs and then start up all over again.
I definitely agree that there must be a divine answer to this. That's certainly part of my Hashkafat Olam, the way that I see the world, that the prevalence of anti-Semitism and at the exact same time, the success of Jewish people is something which can only be answered on a metaphysical level personally. I also wonder if when you say that some Jews who are embarrassed by that success, they sacrifice themselves on that altar of CRT or DEI, I wonder if really sometimes it's not so much sacrificing themselves as sacrificing everybody else, but saying, I'm one of the good ones. I'm one of the people that you can actually trust as one of the good Jews. Nevertheless, I want to ask about the question of stereotypes, because obviously people like you and me are very sensitive to Jewish stereotypes because we're Jewish. Is it possible that the same problem is seen in all communities? In other words, the people in different ethnic communities or religious communities are also troubled by the portrayal of their various groups. The reason that we don't see it, however, is because as Jews, we're going to see what we understand. And to us, that looks normal. We don't understand. It's a stereotype or a trope. Not that it doesn't happen, but maybe it's happening across the board with all ethnic groups. How do we know that this is specifically a problem dafka in the Jewish community?
It has been a problem for every other group. And it's interesting because years ago, before I knew that there was this dynamic of Hollywood bureaus, and I only discovered that other groups had been organizing with Hollywood bureaus for decades in most cases as a total accident. Since it's Adar, it feels kind of like a Purim story. I was trying to change people's perceptions of Orthodox Jews for years through social media, through sometimes making relationships with journalists. At one point, I sort of did an analysis and reached out to every Orthodox Jew I knew working in Hollywood to figure out how do we get on a consultants list. Seems like they have consultants for doctors and police officers. Is there a way to become Jewish consultants so we can help with these storylines? And I sort of exhausted the connections that I had and didn't come up with anything. In 2021, my friend and one of our advisory board members now, Melina Saval, wrote an award-winning article in Variety about how caricatures of Jews in television and film was increasing Jew hatred and leading to more anti-Semitism. And if we wanted to do something to stem the tide, we had to change how Jews are depicted. So I cold messaged her on LinkedIn. I said, this is great. We want to do something. What should we do? And she was like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, everyone's going to read this. Like Hollywood kind of just seems to be stuck where it is. And I said, Melina, I'll do something. What can I do? And just in passing, she mentioned a woman named Sue Obeidy to me. I Googled her and my jaw hits the floor. This woman is running this group called the Muslim Pack Hollywood Bureau. They have relationships with every studio and network. They are putting proud and knowledgeable Muslim writers in the room. They are training the executive producers. They're putting culturally competent Muslim consultants in the room. And the thing is that like I had actually noticed that stories for other groups had been getting better over the past few years. I had seen more diverse cast of characters. I saw, you know, in This Is Us, the Black character, Randall Pearson, is the most academic in his white family. He's the best swimmer in his white family. On Jack Ryan, there's a Black Muslim character who stops in the middle of the day to daven Muslim mincha, although they have, you know, probably three afternoon prayers. I was seeing that they were adding disabled characters to sort of normalize them, not focusing on the disability, but just sort of having them as part of the story, but this person couldn't see. And so I couldn't figure out how it was they were doing this. Well, I went onto Instagram to tell our fans that someone has to start this for the Jews, what this Muslim, you know, community has started. And I accidentally tagged NAACP Hollywood Bureau when I was trying to tag MPAC Hollywood Bureau. And then I'm like, wait, the Black community has this too. At this point, I went to Google. I Googled Asian Hollywood Bureau. I discovered CAPE. I saw they all have four letters and we were Jew in the city. And I'm like, perfect. If everyone else is doing it, but the Jews, it's not because one group knows more than we do. It's that Jews are too scared to have this conversation. And so that was why I started this for Jews. But yes, to answer your original question, yes, characters of all ethnic and minority groups were always depicted with more tropes and caricatures and in more cartoonish ways. And NAACP Hollywood Bureau was founded 70 years ago. Muslim PAC Hollywood Bureau and New Lap for the Hispanic community was founded 30 years ago. These groups have been doing this work literally for decades, but in the last several years, there's been a real push and a real interest to actually make more systemic changes, and society as a whole bought into it. The problem is that this progress that's been made never included Jews until we got into the ring and literally started the fight.
Have you seen progress since you started that fight?
We have. So at the Television Academy Inclusion Summit a year and a half ago, for 2 hours, they spoke about every marginalized group. This is a few weeks after the Kanye situation. And they were telling us, be brave, speak your truth. And after the end of the session, they said, did we forget anything? And my heart starts beating in my chest. And I'm thinking, am I going to tell a room full of diversity experts that they forgot the Jews? And I'm like, yeah, I will. And I pick up the mic and I'm like, I'm sitting here in your inclusion conference as a Jew feeling completely invisible. I give a little monologue. And by the time I'm done speaking, every Jew in the room walks up to me. They're not there for Jewish advocacy. They're there for women's advocacy or disability advocacy. They thank me and thank me for finally saying the thing that they've been so desperate to say. Many non-Jews are very appreciative, especially Black people. What ends up happening is that I get to write an article for Scholars and Storytellers, an academic entertainment group at UCLA, and sort of explain the Jewish story in progressive language. I was approached by a producer at ABC that did this beautiful storyteller spotlight on my life and our work. And that is probably the most authentic and positive portrayal of Orthodox Jews I've ever seen on television before. And then at their next inclusion summit, they had a panel on Jewish representation and anti-Semitism. We're doing a study now with the Norman Lear Center. This is the leading group that does studies of academic entertainment. And we're just about done with the study. And God willing, it's going to be really groundbreaking what we see. And with that data, you know, we hope to be able to actually move the needle. We've developed showrunner trainings, which showrunners are the executive producers of television shows. And so we have a fact sheet, we have this training, and we're going to CAA, which is an agency, a big agency out in LA, to train their showrunners out there. And so it's slow, and pretty much every space we go to, we have to prove why we deserve to be here. But we are making progress. We've been to Sundance the last 2 years with panels on Jewish representation. Every other group has had panels for many, many years. When we got there a year plus ago, we were the first group to have these conversations for Jews and bring this topic to the film community. So yes, we're making progress, but it's not easy. Most of it is a fight. And then we're also planning our second Jewish Media Awards for this fall in November at Lincoln Center. We had our first Media Awards in 2022. All the other groups call out the bad and then also, you know, sort of reward the good. So this is going to be our chance to highlight the shows and movies that are doing it right.
That's fantastic. Let me ask you before I ask about who's doing it right. Has there been pushback? You said it's still a fight, but has there been actual pushback where people say, what are you talking about? Jews are so overrepresented already.
Yeah, sure. So some of the pushback is kind of like, do you have data to support this? And, you know, those are some of the questions we got originally. And it was like, okay, we need to run those studies. Like, you know, we'll get back to you soon. So now having the study, I think, will be a lot more powerful. Some of it is taking meetings, but then sort of like, okay, now the next step is we'd like to come in and actually do the trainings. And, you know, look, Hollywood is known for flakiness and taking a long time to hear back from people. So I have to also chalk that up to just kind of the Hollywood, you know, speed as well. We recognize that, you know, it's going to take time to change people's perceptions of how things should be. The other piece is on hiring. there is definitely a sense, and this is talking to younger people, there's this older generation that still has power, the older generation, the Spielberg era, that, you know, is known, can get movies and TV shows made. And you look at them, and there's this perception that Jews are running everything. What's happening to the younger generation is that they are not considered diverse. And so as hires, people are doing hiring for different shows and movies, they are looking for sort of diversity candidates. They want that diverse mix of people involved with the project. And especially for Jewish men, for white passing Jewish men, this is kind of like the worst thing that you could be. And so what's happening is that as that sort of spigot is closing, we're just getting less fresh, younger Jews into the mix. And so if we need positive representation, authentic representation to tell our stories, to change how people think about us, by allowing less Jews kind of through the door, it's going to start changing what we're even able to do. So this is something that we're thinking a lot about. How do we get more Jews in the room? One of the projects that we have besides our other projects I described is there are pipeline programs that studios have to get diverse people in the room. So we can say that there have never been Jews in the room. That's not true. What we can say is that there have not been Shomer Shabbos observant Jews in the room. They have not gotten a chance to tell their story. And my joke is that, you know, if we can pull that off, like everyone in Hollywood will do tshuva because now we'll get the diversity card. But I think a more realistic sort of way to sell this is not only by saying that, and we have not had that many knowledgeable and proud Jews in the room. We've had Jews by birth in the room, but we have not had Jews who have really delved in deeply to their heritage and their traditions and are coming from a place of knowledge and deep pride. And so one of the things that we're working to build next is a membership within JITC Hollywood Bureau and a set of classes to educate and inspire the creatives of Hollywood to take them on Shabbos programs and Yom Tov programs and do actual Torah text study with them and fill them with a sense of knowledge and pride that has just not existed for people working in Hollywood before. If we can then go to the studios and say, we're going to offer you a type of Jew that you've never had before, and we need Jews like this to tell our stories, I'm hoping it's going to be hard to argue with that. And I'm hoping that Jews that have those seats at the table will be able to tell very different stories.
That's very exciting. So I mentioned before that I'd like to know about some of the shows that, or movies that are doing it well. Can you give an example or two of some Hollywood products which actually have given a positive portrayal of Jews and particularly Orthodox Jews?
So I would say Jewish Matchmaking, in terms of like a show that a lot of people have seen, was one of the best portrayals of Orthodox Jews I've ever seen on television. Aliza Ben Shalom is so lovely and warm and non-judgmental. And what's so groundbreaking about the show, there's a few things. From the Orthodox perspective, suddenly it's the secular Jews that are going to the Orthodox Jew to say, hey, maybe you have some wisdom that I'm missing. I'm not sure if my life of kind of, you know, dating casually and partying a lot is working out so well. I think I want to settle down. What can Jewish wisdom teach me about that? So that's groundbreaking. The other thing for Jewish representation in general for that show, it's diverse. And it's also Jews falling in love with Jews, which we almost never see. The first talkie film, the first time that the founders of Hollywood got a chance to put sound on a film, they told an ex-Orthodox story. In 1927, the jazz singer came out and the Chazan's son married Mary and assimilated. So the first time they got to tell a story, they told a story about Jews becoming less Jewish.
The actor himself was Jewish.
Yeah. The reason that it's important for Jews to see Jews loving Jews, not only because we want there to be Jewish continuity, it's because if we're so yucky that we don't want to choose each other, what does that say about, you know, how we see ourselves, about the image we're putting out? Part of what we did when we built our fact sheet was that we looked at fact sheets that other groups had written. And I found something really interesting on the Black fact sheet of this group that we were working with, where they said they want to see more instances of Black women being loved. And I was like, huh. We don't see Jewish women being loved on TV and movies. We usually see Jewish women being chosen over for the preferable non-Jewish woman, or if she's married to a Jew because she's Orthodox, she's usually being mistreated by her abusive Orthodox husband. So not only does Jewish Matchmaking show that, you're so not invited to buy a bat mitzvah is a happily married Jewish man and woman, you know, raising proud Jewish children. So we have had some examples recently where we are seeing some of that pride. Reboot is a show on Disney that came out a couple of years ago. They had an episode where they just are suddenly inside a modern Orthodox high school, and the kids are playing basketball and they're pretty good. And it's kind of like a modern Orthodox high school that I could recognize. It's not really over the top. It's not really tropey. It's just kind of these Jewish kids named Moshe and Ari, who can play ball pretty well. And I think we need to see more examples of that. I think the more awareness that exists, the more that these opportunities will arise.
Have there been, Allison, specific Jewish actors, and I have a few that I can think of, I'm sure you can think of more, who have really come to the fore in trying to champion these same ideas and also at that same time defending Jews in Israel? In my own mind, I think of people like Deborah Messing and others like her who have been very good. Can you give some examples of some people who are models of Jewish pride and who have been emphasizing the right things, so to speak?
Yes, so Deborah Messing is terrific. She had not been to Israel until October 7th. It's a pretty fascinating thing to have your first trip to Israel, come on such a horrific event. But I do think that October 7th has woken a lot of Hollywood Jews up to the point where what they thought before, that I can just stay quiet and blend in and become American, and this sort of hatred of my people will finally be over. I think what many of them have woken up to is that the hatred of the past is here now in the present, and we won't do okay staying silent. It's time to speak up. So Deborah has been great. Michael Rappaport, a couple of our new advisory board members, Brett Gelman from Stranger Things, Jennifer Goodwin, who's been in a bunch of different TV shows and movies like Walk the Line, and Once Upon a Time. They've also been very vocal. There's kind of like a handful that are very vocal.
Mind Bialik as well.
Oh yeah, Mayim, obviously, yeah. I mean, but the thing is that Mayim has been vocal for years now, not just about Israel, but normalizing, Orthodox practice. Mayim's doing Hafrashas Challah on Instagram. Like, no one has ever done that before. Mayim, dressing modestly on the red carpet, talking about mikveh or going offline for Shabbos. Yeah, Mayim has been in a class of her own for many, many years, but sort of this new awakening since October 7th has gotten a bunch of Jews. Juliana Margulies, has been very outspoken as well. Thank God there is more and more awareness and more pride.
I know we have very little time, but I want to ask you about October 7th. And the answer might be it's too early to tell. As you said, Hollywood does move sluggishly. But since October 7th, we're coming up on almost, believe it or not, 6 months. Has anything gotten better or worse in Hollywood in terms of portrayal of Jews? Obviously, in the world, in the news world, at least coming from the Israeli perspective, it seems that things are pretty awful. Has that been manifest in the entertainment world as well?
So we put out a letter in December, or was it early January, maybe early January, calling out the Motion Picture Academy for excluding Jews and their new diversity standards. We got 450 signatures, and about 70 of those signatures of people working in Hollywood were top executives and celebrities like David Schwimmer, Deborah Messing, Jason Alexander, and then, top agents, top just executives at different, studios. I don't think that this letter that I wrote, which did not mince words, I mean, it basically said that Hollywood was founded on internalized shame and internalized loathing, self-loathing. It said that, if we're here to correct historic wrongs in this DEI framework, then Jews have been wrong from the beginning because our portrayals have been caricatures. Only a certain type of Jew has been welcomed in Hollywood, sort of the tamped down, toned down Jew. The flagrantly looking or observant Jew has never been welcome there. And we basically called on the Motion Picture Academy to not only see Jews as a diverse group, which we are, but also help create a framework where we too can have authentic representation and accommodations. And seeing the number of people that signed it and now that we followed up with and had follow-up meetings to talk about, hey, this is where we're getting stuck. We want to keep moving the needle. Can you get us a meeting here or there? That's been super helpful. So it does take time for projects to get developed. The other thing to note is that not only are we trying to prevent the tropes, and I see the work that we're doing as sort of like mitzvos. We have our lo tase and our ase. So we want to prevent the bad stuff, and then we want to push in the good stuff. So not only, you know, has the bad stuff been prevalent, it's very hard for positive Jewish content to get greenlit, even for top people working in the industry. And so I think there's more awareness that people that fund content need to fund proud, authentic Jewish content.
Allison, my final question is about something that happened recently at the Oscars when Jonathan Glazer, the director of the Oscar-winning The Zone of Interest, which is a film about Auschwitz, said, I'm going to quote him, "Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack in Gaza, all the victims of this dehumanization, how do we resist?" Now, admittedly, he phrased that very awkwardly in such a way that what he actually was saying was not refuting his Jewishness, but refuting Jewishness being used in the service of dehumanization. But that's not really my point. My question for you is, I was really bothered by the fact, not so much that he said that, which was troubling, but that he got an ovation. People applauded it. It sounded like people in Hollywood agree with whatever it was that he was saying. Is that a sign that things are getting worse, or is there some hopeful message that we can say, no, it's not really as bad as it looked from that moment?
I mean, I think things are getting better and worse simultaneously. I think that the normalization of hating Jews openly is getting worse. And I think Jews digging in their heels and saying, we're not going to be the quiet Jews that don't want to stir up trouble is getting better. So there were 1,200 Jews, you know, mostly working in Hollywood that signed a letter, and we helped with outreach for this letter after the fact. And yes, there were people that applauded that. You know, I gave a statement to the Hollywood Reporter, sort of based on like a little meme I put up on Instagram. I saw a post about Cillian Murphy, who accepted his award, standing here today as a very proud Irishman. And then next to it, I put like Jonathan Glazer, you know, we refute our Jewishness. And yes, I know it wasn't the full phrase, but my question is, like, when are we going to see the Jewish person working in Hollywood who can accept their award saying, I stand here as a very proud Jew? I think when there is a Jew who is prominent enough to get that award, and keep in mind now, there is definitely a sense of quashing Jewish power and having Jews have less opportunities to even win those awards. But if we could get to a point where there would be a Jew who might feel comfortable enough to say, I stand here today as a very proud Jew, I think that will be a sign of real progress, but we're going to have to keep fighting to get, you know, to get someone like that up there and confident enough to be able to speak like Cillian Murphy did.
Well, if there's anybody who can affect that kind of change and instill that sort of Jewish pride within the Hollywood world, I'm confident that it's you and your organization. Allison, I've been a fan of yours for quite a while from a distance, and it's been an honor to be able to speak with you in person. Allison Josephs, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure. Great talking to you, too.
Subscribe to The Orthodox Conundrum on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Please visit JewishCoffeeHouse.com for other episodes of The Orthodox Conundrum, as well as many other great podcasts, including Intimate Judaism, The Maimonides Minute, Chochmat Nashim, The Francisca Show, and Let My People Eat. I'd appreciate it if you go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Orthodox Conundrum. It takes literally 2 minutes. It's just giving a certain number of stars and writing one or two sentences. Please like the Orthodox Conundrum podcast on Facebook and join our growing Facebook group, the Orthodox Conundrum Discussion Group, where you can feel free to discuss issues in Orthodoxy in an honest and friendly environment. I hope you'll become a Jewish Coffeehouse patron on Patreon. Just click on the link in the description of this podcast, and you can get bonus episodes, Jewish Coffeehouse merch, and more. You'll get special episodes on all sorts of topics that are only available to subscribers, and you'll be helping Jewish Coffeehouse spread our message of a welcoming, intellectually engaged, and honest Orthodoxy. Just join Patreon. It's only a couple of dollars a month, and you can stop anytime, so join today. Finally, do you have a message that needs to get out? Do you want to promote your business, your organization, or your cause? The best way is by producing a podcast, and Jewish Coffee House can make it happen. I have experience producing hundreds of podcasts, both for myself and for satisfied clients. Whether you want to learn everything you need in one day, or relax and record and let me do the heavy lifting, Jewish Coffeehouse Productions will work with you to make it happen and make it even better than you imagined. Let me help you today. Write to me at scott@jewishcoffeehouse.com or go to jewishcoffeehouse.com, click on Productions, and sign up for a free consultation. Make your voice heard, promote your cause, sell your product, and engage an audience now. I'm Scott Kahn. This has been The Orthodox Conundrum on jewishcoffeehouse.com.